They are the national nuclear regulator. They regulate, they don't take decisions on nuclear, they regulate.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, honorable members of the committee. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present to you today the annual report of National Nuclear Regulator for the year financial year 2013-2014. With me today I have on my left Mr. Jeff Lever, who is the member of the Audit and Risk Committee of the National Nuclear Regulator, of the Board of the National Nuclear Regulator. And to the extreme left, I have the Colonel Chishiva Zwawulu. I always have to try hard to get it right. Who is the Chief Financial Officer of the NR. The presentation will be divided in three parts. I'll give an overview of the main highlights, and then the financials will be presented by the CFO, and audit and risk issues will be presented by Mr. Lever. I must upfront apologize for our chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee, who had wanted to have been here with us today, but due to some unforeseen circumstances, was unable to do so. So Mr. Lever is standing in his place, as of course a member of the committee himself. The feelers. It's important for us to remind this honorable committee and members of what we stand for. We have a vision to be an independent, world-class regulatory authority on nuclear safety, and our mission is to provide and maintain an effective and efficient national regulatory framework for the protection of persons, property, and environment against nuclear damage. I'm glad to mention, Mr. Chair, that we are living this vision and mission. We stand for that, and we're confident that so far we are on track to be that independent world-class regulatory authority on nuclear safety. The values that we espouse are professionalism. We hold ourselves accountable to the highest standards of professionalism in everything that we do. We always try to demonstrate integrity and ethical conduct in all that we do. And of course, we are nothing without our people, so we demonstrate that we value our people in all that we do, and we always strive for excellence in everything that we do as an international nuclear regulator. Again, to refresh the committee members' my memory, we just have to point out what are the key functions of the regulatory body, like the NR. We grant or amend nuclear authorizations. In other words, we issue licenses to operators of nuclear facilities. Of course, like any other corporate entity, we employ assets and deploy resources. In other words, we hire, we purchase, we acquire property, skills, resources. We collaborate with other institutions for the question and dissemination of scientific and technical information regarding nuclear energy. We also collaborate with other institutions regarding provisions of instruction for or training of persons required by the NNR, as you will see in the body of the report that we have done extensively in that area of training and capacity building, as well as entering into different kinds of bilateral agreements with other institutions and countries. We provide financial and other assistance for the training of people to enable the NR to perform its functions. And of course, as any other entity, we help ensure ourselves against loss, damage, risk, or liability. One of our very important tasks is to advise the minister on conditions that may cause nuclear damage. Also advise the minister on items that the minister has referred to the National Nuclear Regulator. And of course, without being prompted by the minister, we also have to advise the minister on what to think is necessary. We act as a national competent authority in connection with the International Nuclear Atomic Energy Agency's regulations, and we conclude contracts to enhance the value of the services rendered by us. And as we saw today, we also prepare and submit annual reports on the health and safety of workers, the public and environment associated with all sites that regulate. Now, looking into the annual performance salary, the board of the NNR approved a target of 8% performance, overall performance. And for the financial year 2013-2014, the organization has performed at a level of 82.6%. That means we have met and exceeded the target that was set by the board. It is worthwhile to note that in 2012-13, the target was still 80, and we exceeded it again at 81. So that shows some steady increase in the delivery of our mandate, in our performance. I must also hasten to say, Chairperson, that in line with our ethos of upholding the culture of high performance, we have actually this year, in this current financial year, requested the board to up the ante and take the performance targets to 85%. So we hope that when we report to you in the next financial, at the end of the next financial year, we will be talking something above 85%. To demonstrate that, Jefferson, you can see from the four areas of our scorecard how we have performed in order to reach the 82.6%. Our scorecard has got four quadrants, regulatory and stakeholder, financial, internal business, learning and development. You can see from the figures to the extreme right that the area that experiences low delivery is that of the area of learning and development. Precisely because we have experienced challenges in this area, in that one of our executives in charge of this area resigned, and the position was vacant for almost 5-6 months. So we experienced a dip in performance in that area. Nevertheless, we still emerged with 2.6%. Looking at the quarterly performance, you can see that starting from quarter one, there was that increase from 78.4 to 80, and then we had that dip in quarter three because of that area, that pattern of learning and development. We dipped to 70.6, and however, we recovered and picked up to 91.93% in the fourth quarter, to average 82.6 overall performance. Annual key highlights on the side of annual compliance assurance. The NNR can provide an assurance of compliance with conditions of authorizations. That's our job. In this regard, all scheduled inspections for all facilities were completed sometime. Audits and environmental samples collections were done as scheduled, as planned. In cases of non-compliance, we took the appropriate enforcement measures, and the nuclear facility operators have operated within the applicable limits for radiation exposure of members of the public and occupationally exposed workers. That is, that well below the regulatory criteria of 0.6 millisieverts per annum and 4 millisieverts per annum for members of the public and occupationally exposed workers, respectively. We conducted peer review missions to Ghana, Kenya, Botswana, Mauritius, and to assess the NNR's expertise in the regulation of transport of radioactive materials. The NNR's transport safety asset, Mr. Paul Henderson, was appointed as chairman of the International Atomic Energy Agency's Transport Safety Standards Committee for the term 2014-2017. This, ladies and gentlemen, is an achievement that South Africa can be very proud of, because it clearly shows that the world recognizes the skills that we possess in this particular area of regulation of transport of radioactive waste material. Student compliance assurance, this is a repetition of the slides. We also had a third revision of the post-Fukushima Kube nuclear power station. This is a safety reassessment report that includes the findings from the completed seismic margin assessment and a progress report on procurement of portable emergency equipment and short-term plant modifications submitted by ESCOM. Members of the committee will recall that as a requirement from the NNR after the Fukushima accident, there were certain things that the Kube nuclear power plant has to satisfy the NNR that it is doing or it has done. And we keep on looking at the safety case to make sure that they are in line with international reaction and response to the Fukushima accident, and so that we avoid a recurrence of such an incident on our shores. In the case of special case mines, as a result of the measures instituted by the National Nuclear Regulator, in this reporting period, these facilities have not exceeded the regulatory limits. The Safari Reactor, Research Reactor at NEPSA, it's expected that this reactor will have an operational life that extends till 2030. You will also know that this reactor is already 50 years old or thereabouts, and 2030 means it will be much more than that, about 65 years. So we have a duty to see to it that with all the aging issues that affect the Safari 1 reactor, it is operated safely and secure. The NNR has requested NESCA to develop and implement an aging management program for this research reactor in accordance with the guidance provided in the IAEA safety guide SSG10. On the side of bilateral and multilateral partners, we have successfully hosted 3 IAEA regional technical workshops in South Africa. South Africa has demonstrated to be the trusted hub for these knowledge-driven workshops in the African continent for the IAEA. And in particular, the National Nuclear Regulator is that partner that assisted the IAEA to pursue this mission for the African continent. We implemented nuclear safety bilateral cooperation programs with the regulatory body in France and in Canada. We also have ongoing interactions and a bilateral agreement with the Rosatom, which is the regulatory body in Russia, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the USA. We also participated in multinational design evaluation programs during technical committee in Helsinki, Finland, and we continue our participation in working groups and technical safety standards committee meetings of IAEA. We also hosted a workshop presented by the USNRC in Centurion at the beginning of the financial year. With regard to our radioactivity analysis laboratory for the establishment project, this project has been completed during the review period. The Agricultural Research Council laboratory, this facility, by the way, is leased from the ERC. it will have the capacity to perform gamma, beta, and alpha, as well as gross alpha beta analysis for radioactivity, for radioactive samples. And we also acquired the NMISA laboratory here in Cape Town, which will process the Kugel power plant samples and will perform gamma and beta analysis. The operation of both of these is scheduled to commence in the next financial year. Nuclear Safety Compliance Index, although we have minor occurrences that were reported during the period under review, we must note that there were no nuclear occurrences that can be classified under the category of a nuclear accident or a nuclear incident as defined in the NRX during the review period. So from that we can draw a conclusion that our holders, our authorization holders, have been upholding the highest levels of safety, and that also is an indication of the effectiveness of our compliance assurance measures in place. As far as human capital is concerned, we extensively reviewed our human resources policies and procedures, and in that regard we sent out the individual performance management policy, the occupational health and safety and health and safety policy, and management of poor work performance policy. The review process will continue into the next financial year, and a number of these policies have already been progressed board for approval. Research, we also are researching international best practices of comparative nuclear regulators to develop a customized job evaluation system for the NNR. For the past years, we have had a dilemma of knowing whether we are in a position, we place our staff in the right positions as far as their skills are concerned and remuneration. So we had to go through a process of benchmarking to make sure that we reward our staff according to their very valuable skills and expertise. On the side of the technical performance, we issued nuclear authorizations. Two of these are the nuclear vehicle licenses. Nuclear installation licenses are 42 of them. Certificates of registration 147. Now this pertains to mining and mineral processing, scrap processors, small users and service providers. And of course we issued 5 certificates of exemption under various conditions. Looking at the occupational exposures to radiation at the Kudus Nuclear Power Station, the committee will see from this chart that we are maintaining a very clean slate for occupational exposures. 2013 has seen throughout 0 to 10 millisieverts exposures, which is right within the regulatory limits. So we have kept the constraints. Special case mines, in terms of the annual total annual doses to employees, you can see that these special case mines, very few of them are operating between 10 to 20 millisieverts, but in total, none of them is actually above 50%, and excuse me, 50 millisieverts as required by our regulation. So we are also keeping a sense rate in that regard. To update you on the key capital projects, the regulator has gone into optimization of legal and regulatory framework. This was prepared by the self-assessment tool from IEA, from which we drew an action plan. In this regard, we are well advanced and we have submitted proposals for the amendment of the NNR Act and also submitted a number of nuclear safety regulations to beef up our regulatory regime. And as far as the inner mission is concerned, members will recall that the IAEA conducted 2 years ago now an integrated nuclear infrastructure review mission from which an action plan was drawn. However, this process has not progressed much, as we are still awaiting the report from the Department of Energy on way forward regarding the INIA mission report. The Emergency Control Center has been one of those key projects that we think that we always believe that an effective and efficient regulatory body cannot operate without. And this process is underway, but progressing slow. We'll talk about that later. We continue to refurbish the Cape Town site office in anticipation of staff expansion. Of course, our office in the site office in Cape Town is in a very bad shape in terms of maintenance, and we have taken the measures of refurbishment and to actually relocate our staff to a different area so that we can deal with the situation in the site office. The lab, as I mentioned earlier, is complete. The one in Centura is complete, and the one in Cape Town is nearing completion. The replacement of the steam generator at the Kubek nuclear power plant is also one of those very key projects that the regulator is working on. In this regard, we are in the process of putting these skills and hoping to onboard them before the end of the calendar year 2014, in time to kick off the projects in the next calendar year. Centralized interim spent fuel storage facility and the transit interim storage facility project has been delayed. We obviously have to take cues from ESCOM on what their plans are in this regard. The nuclear expansion program of the 9.6 gigawatts, the preparations for this are in progress, and as the chair said, we don't take decisions in this regard, but we are standing by to receive application from potential owner-operator of the new fleet, and our job will be to license and to make sure that these are constructed, operated safely and securely. Moving on to human resources, the equity status of the NNR is reflected in the chart, as you can see. Currently, in top management, we have one male, that would be me, and we have 18. We have 18 Africans and 7 colors and 14 and 4 Indians and 11 Latins in the senior management category. Professionally qualified, we have 12 Africans, 6 colors, 3 Indians and 11 whites, and so on and so on. As we noted, the high number of people reported at senior management level is due to the incorrect categorization of employees in our internal systems based on the occupational categories as opposed to occupational level. This has since been addressed, and the NNR has embarked on an extensive job evaluation process in order to further properly categorize employees based on the relative ranking and value of jobs within the organization. And correct categorization follows in this slide. I will now hand over to the CFO to address the financials.
Thank you, CEO, and good morning to Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. The NNR, once again, reported on its annual financial statement, a very positive picture as far as our balance sheet is concerned, as the CEO has been indicating on the key highlights of what we have been doing in the previous financial year. We have embarked on a number of capital projects, including the radioactivity analysis laboratory and the emergency control center. And as a result, our balance sheet have been improving as far as the asset base is concerned. So if you look at our receivables, we have been doing quite well in terms of collecting our debts well on time, and notably on property, plant and equipment, we have been growing. We came from 120 million and now we're sitting at 128 million. Of course, this is mainly influenced by the office building that we have in Centura that we purchased apart. So it hit around about 90 million on our asset base. Just as in the other financial liabilities that you see that sit around about 7 million, it talks about as well the bond that we have raised to finance that bill because we didn't buy it for cash. So we are still servicing that particular bond. So notably, those are the significant changes that are on our balance sheet. One other issue that most probably the committee might have interest on is the unspent conditional grants that we have that are picking at 31 million. This directly relates to the capital injection that the National Treasury gave us to establish or implement this capital project, including the Cape Town office refurbishment and the emergency control center that we will, that the CEO has been talking about the progress on project in his previous slide. So just as I'm going to the next slide, is just an illustration indicating how much of the spark our asset base has realized since 2012 financial year up until 2014. So as I've indicated, we came from around about 30 million. Now we are sitting at 128 million. That is more related to the building that we purchased that I was talking about. In terms of our cash and cash equivalents here, we have had a growth in the credit bank, and that of course relates to the money that we are using to or earmarked and refinanced for the capital project that we are busy with. The non-current liabilities, of course, I've already illustrated as the bond, and therefore just indicating there graphically how our trends have been for the past three financial years. Certainly, we are not a very highly indebted organization. We have got very few debts. We try our level best to pay our suppliers well within 3 days. And it's all set. Our audited outcomes are sitting below 20 days. So therefore, our liability is quite very low. To go to our statement of financial performance, we have grown our operating fees from 99 million to 115 million in the past financial year. And this is mainly because of the steam generator replacement program that we are doing at with ECOM. We have been doing a whole lot of groundwork in preparation for that project that ESCOM is progressing with, and of which they have announced the appointment of the service provider just 2 months ago. Chairperson, we must say that as we increase this corporation fees, sometimes it does have a bearing on how our operators do their work, in particular because we do regulate government entities as well, such as the NERSA, and sorry, the NEXA. You'll find that as we increase, sometimes we do feel the pinch somehow on the other side. But of course, these are consultative process that we do with our operators where necessary and make sure that all is in harmony. Chairperson, the high spark of what we call deferred income, it again directly relates to the money that we have, that we are working on capital projects. So all it means that we have it, but we will realize as and when we have finished doing the job that is earmarked to do. Notably, you will see that our compensation of employees have grown from 75 million to 87 million. Now, this talks to the capacity that we are acquiring to stabilize our regulatory capacity and again to address the steam generator replacement project that we are dealing with now. This is just an analytical review, just indicating graphically how has the trend been. So we have moved from 88 million in terms of our rising fees from 2012, and we are now sitting with 115 million in the year under review. Just an issue of concern is that our government grant fees that has been on the steady decline from 2015, from 2012 we were sitting at 35 million and they've been going down to 31 million in 2014, which is the year under review. We have just received news again from Treasury in past week that they are going to be reducing this 31 million contribution that they make to us by 50 million in the next financial year and 20 million on the outer years. Now, this means that that 31 million that you see in 2014, in the next 2 years, it will reduce to something like 10 million. Now, this creates a serious challenge for us as a regulator, particularly as we are playing for these major projects, which are skills intensive and which requires us to be forerunners in the problem, in the projects as far as preparedness is concerned, so that we are able to respond adequately as and when the operators submit their proposal for licenses or applications, or there are needs for assessments, there are needs for compliance assurance, etc. This is just a breakdown of how our expenses are made up. So as you see, majority or in the main, our costs go more to compensation of employees. So as you have a huge budget reduction, you are posed with a serious challenge on how do you grapple with absorbing the reduction, because your compensation of employees is based on a fixed cost, and therefore you can't do much about it in a short space of time. So that is a challenge that we are looking at and we are going to be faced with for the next 2 financial years. Chairperson, our just to sum up as far as financial performance is concerned, this slide just in writing summarize all those slides that I was indicating, and we are still expecting the present the increase on our compensation of employees even in the current financial year, because as we anticipate and prepare for this major project, we are making sure that our skills are in par. And as you will understand, we are a service-driven organization, and therefore the human resources is our major asset, and as a, that's why most of our money goes to that expense item. Of course, we have been in the same breath increasing a bit our green services, because as we establish these new facilities, we need to have operational costs factored in for them to run adequately. We have worked very hard to try and rein in a lot of costs that can be regarded as fringe or variable that we can do something about. And Chair, then the treasury move was just talking about find us when we have cut our operational costs to the bone, and as a result, gives us a serious shock. We, Chairperson, this is where I'll end, and then I'll hand over to Mr. Lever to take the committee through the audit committee work or report. Thank you.
Thank you, and again, Chair. Honourable Chair, good morning to you and to the honourable members of your committee. As was said, the chairperson of our OMFOM, we call it, was not available this morning, so I've been asked to step in his shoes. Really, I'm just a vague shadow of his capability, because I'm not an accountant or a internal auditor, and he's both. So I hope you bear with me, because I really do think it is important to have this opportunity to explain to yourself and members of your committee the vital role which our audit and risk management committee plays in the internal controls of the organisation. It does in fact play the part of regulating the regulator, I guess. So let me start by just giving you a little bit of background, and I'm afraid you're going to have to bear with me. I know you've had a busy and tiring week, and what audit committees do will be no surprise to you. We're not much different, but we like to think that we have reached a level of maturity which is now paying valuable dividends to us. Okay, so our audit and risk management committee operates in terms of a charter which is approved by the board, and it consists of five executive directors on the board. The chairman of the committee, as I said, is a CA and certified internal auditor, and he's an independent non-executive director too. Now, the committee members let me put it this way, the committee also invites to sit on it with the members I've mentioned, representatives from the Auditor General's office, and we also invite the CEO and the CFO, and any other member staff who we think might be able to add value to the committee's deliberations. In particular, ICT is an issue which we're giving considerable attention to at the moment, which I'll perhaps mention later on. This view graph really provides an overview. It maps out the areas which the committee gets involved with, and it will be no surprise to you, Chair, and your members, that assurance, compliance, performance and risk are absolutely cardinal. If I can just spend a couple of minutes talking to some of these aspects here. The committee receives reports from the external auditors. It also oversees the internal audits of the organisation, which we pay great attention to, and would oversee any special audits which were commissioned. In terms of compliance, it institutes a compliance program to make sure that that is addressing all the controls which it regards as being important. So it identifies all of those and also sits over the reporting regime. In terms of performance, we have a large number of policies and procedures. I think we now have all areas covered with policies and procedures. And we find that in terms of expenditure, looking after expenditure and the budgeting, collectibles, debtors and so on, we are on top of all of that. The committee, I should say, really is placed in an intermediate position between the board and the executive staff. So we are quite fortunate in being able to get reports from the staff and interrogate the staff on those reports before we report back to the board, so that the board finally can conclude its total oversight responsibilities. In the area of risk, we're looking at strategic risk, and this is we apply our oversight on this every quarter formally, and there might be extra meetings as well, but we certainly have a minimum of four meetings a year. We also look at operational risk, and at the moment we have identified 12 areas in the operational risk spectrum which we are concentrating on, and we also look at fraud risk. Well, whilst talking about risk, perhaps I ought to make quite clear that here we're talking about our own internal operational risks, which is quite different from our overall mandate, which is to control the risk of nuclear damage which the public or the environment may experience. There can be a nexus, but I think from the point of view of my presentation, I'd like you to consider the risk of nuclear damage being something quite different. So just briefly to run through those, our terms of reference, our financial and sustainability reporting, internal financial controls, that's what it's all about, the external audit process which we oversee and liaise with the Office of AXA. The attention that we pay to the internal audit process is an intense one. We take our risk management internally very seriously. In fact, the staff spend a fair proportion of their employment time looking at internal risks. So they're well advised on that. Information technology, as I mentioned, is something which over the years has been a bit of a thorn in our side. I should point out here that the lifeblood of our regulatory activities depends upon an information flow. This information starts by the board requiring information from the potential licensee. That information is reviewed, it's reanalyzed, that's what our staff do, and we have to have instant recall to that information once it's filed away. It's been our intention over the years to have a paperless system. We've never achieved it, but in fact, just yesterday, we were looking at some latest proposals, and we feel that we're making very good headway in this direction now. And then, last but not least, of course, is the overall performance management of the organization. We review on a quarterly basis the feedback from these strategic targets which we've set and which the CEO has already alluded to. And then, of course, on an ongoing basis, the committee recommends to the board for its approval any matter that has been referred to it in terms of its terms of reference. Okay, the next slide sets out a matrix of our internal control. It's really a hierarchical plan of all the instances that come into play. On the left are the enveloping considerations of legislation, policies, charters and procedures. At the top we have governance arrangements which the board looks after. And then we have the organizational objectives which take us into the strategy. And then, as I mentioned, overall we have this enterprise-wide risk assessment which is carried out on an ongoing basis. That involves the processes, systems, the people. All that cascades down into the performance, which is oversighted by the committee in the areas of financial, operational, compliance and environmental, because we want to be good environmental citizens. And then last but by no means least is the assurance which is obtained through management, interfacing with management and getting reports from management from the internal audit function and again last but not least the external audit function. This slide shows some of the outputs from our externally audited statements from the year that we're talking about. And you'll see that under leadership of the 18 items that were considered, we came out good in 16 of these, and two were noted as being in progress. In financial and performance management, there were 15 items considered, 14 of these were good, and one was still in progress. In governance, of the 9 reviewed, all were found to be in good shape. Just to bring you up to date on that, the unpacking shows that as we speak, I can report that on the left-hand side under leadership, the two areas of policies and procedures and IT governance which the AXA picked up as being still under review or still under action have now been completed, and we just yesterday, in fact, we accepted their completion. And the same with financial performance management. IT system controls were regarded as being still in progress, and we made progress on that yesterday too. So really, without wanting to blow our own trumpet too much, we feel that we are now in pretty good shape. And just to put the cherry on the cake, I can report that we obtained a clean audit report for the reporting period. So, Chair, that concludes what I want to say. There are some concluding remarks now which I'll hand over to the CEO to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lever. Chair, as Jeff says, it's not good to blow your own trumpet, but I must emphasize, I would fail in my duties as Chief Executive Officer to not emphasize this one, that this clean audit is the best for the NR, at least for the past 10 years. We've always been sitting on the unqualified audits, but this is the first time we've got a clean audit, and I can only attribute that to the very hard work of the NNR staff members, the very good of very stringent oversight from the Audit and Risk Committee and the entire board members, and of course my colleagues in management have demonstrated dedication and commitment to making sure that we turn the organization around and make it the world-class regulator that we aspire to be. However, it's not all hunky-dory. There's always challenges that we have to come across and try to deal with, and it's important for us to highlight to this committee the challenges that we have encountered in the past during the capital review. We've encountered delays in the completion of capital projects, mostly owing to the limited industry suppliers. Most of the projects that we are working on, the laboratory in particular, the three laboratories, two laboratories in particular, and the emergency control center, we have to procure most of the equipment overseas. And this, of course, would have a lot of implications to the delivery. And most importantly, the fluctuation of the rand does not help, because then the project costs are never static. So we see cost overruns, which are not necessarily because of our own doing, but mostly can be attributed to the weak rand. We also diagnosed overstretched project management capacity. We are an organization that is comprised of scientists and engineers, and sometimes scientists do not want to acknowledge the fact that they are not managers in some instances. And when they are, when some of them are in charge of these functions, such as the project management, they would, for the most part, overlook the very, very important essentials of the project management body of knowledge. To that extent, the board has approved the engagement employing of a qualified project manager for the entire organization, who will be overseeing all the projects to make sure that we free our scientists and engineers to do what they can do best, instead of bogging down in project management responsibilities. The lack of certainty in government timeline regarding new bills is not helping the situation. We, as the CFO has rightfully pointed out, have to be the front runners for the whole process. There won't be any nuclear power plant in the country built without our thorough oversight, without the satisfaction of the nuclear regulatory body that everything is in order. We can't be able to execute that function unless we have certainty in as far as the timelines, the type of technology, the size, and so on and so on. That means if we know that, then we are able to plan how many more people we need within the organization, what kind of expertise do we need, and how much more do we need from government in as far as finances are concerned. A lack of inadequate fund model for the regulator, even its expanding responsibilities from government, is also an area of concern. We have over the past year, interacted with the department to highlight our concerns in this regard, and of course, highlight our recommendations as far as the funding formula should be based on international benchmarks. We are assured that the department is looking into these proposals, but we wish that this process can be accelerated so that we move out of that uncertainty. As the CFO has already mentioned, and I must emphasize also, the fact that the National Treasurer has deemed it fit to further identify the National Nuclear Regulator as one of those from which it has actually decided to cut the budget is not helping the situation at all. It gives a situation where we, on one hand, are talking nuclear expansion. On the other hand, we are actually applying what I can conveniently call punitive measures on the same agents that must make sure that this nuclear expansion comes online safely and securely. Such a situation is untenable and is completely unsustainable. And I would wish that the committee would note that and perhaps intervene in that in this kind of situation. We also sit with the challenge, Chairperson, of ineffective regulation of radioactive sources, Category 3 and 4, which are still with the Department of Health. To refresh the members of this committee, there are two regulators in this country that are looking after radiation safety. The Department of Health is looking after radioactive sources that are used in medical, mostly in the medical industry. And we are looking at radioactive sources that are used in industry, like the mines and EXA and so on. Now, this fragmented regulatory regime results in a situation where one player is effective and the other one is almost totally incapacitated. That is the Department of Health. You would have heard several times that there were sources that were picked, there were less sources that were detected, and for the most part, when these things happen, the National Nuclear Regulator is called upon by the authorities to investigate. And every time we do this, we realize these were suspicions that are not within our regulatory control, but that of the DOH. We have to date and engage with the DOH to see that we believe that for us to be effective in this regard, that particular directorate must be ceded to the National Nuclear Regulator. And I'm also glad to report that the Department of Health has also acknowledged that they do not have enough capacity in this regard, and they are willing to cede that responsibility to the National Nuclear Regulator. To the end, the issue is at the ministerial level, and the transfer of responsibilities will be done at that level, and we hope after that transfer we will be able to close all the loopholes that exist in our regulatory framework, and we just harmonize it and make sure that we talk of one regulatory body. We are required by our Act Chairperson to enter into cooperative agreements with our state organs, for example, the Department of Minerals Resources, the Department of Environmental Affairs, Department of Agriculture, the South African National Defense Force, the Civil Aviation Authorities, and on. More often than not, these cooperative agreements are not very effective, and this causes problems for us in the execution of our mandate. Case in point, we had the case of ingestion of contaminated water in one of the mines. And this case was brought to our attention, but after a thorough investigation, we concluded that this is actually an issue of a health and safety issue, mine health and safety issue, which is not our competence, that of the DMR. Had the cooperative agreement been effective, this issue could have been easily detected and handled. But because of the fragmentation in our approaches to regulation, we have these loopholes where very important issues such as that one that I've mentioned fall within the cracks. And we are working hard to try and get our counterparts on board to make sure that such things do not happen again. Again, finally, Chairperson, I would like to thank you and the committee for giving us the opportunity, and we'll be at your disposal to answer to questions. Thank you.
The regulatory body of nuclear safety. I see. But that doesn't give you the authority to take over my meeting and hand over to one another to speak before I finish.
We apologize.
Thanks very much. honorable members, thanks to NMR for the presentation. Honorable Masala, Honorable Freeland, welcome Honorable Lowe, Honorable Lowell, Honorable Faku, Honorable Mana. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I want the clarity with regard to the position of the company secretary, the vacant one. When are you anticipating to fill in that position? Two, Chair, is with regard to poaching. Are there no any other company that are poaching your scientists for greener pastures, because they are there, you know. The other one, Chair, it is with regard to the public safety information forums, that these are established by a nuclear installation license holder for communities living near the facilities. Can the NFR brief us with regard to how are this program established and managed? The other one, Chair, Honorable Chair, is the, can the NRR update us with regard to the situation with the existing ownerless legacy sites and what has been done about it? This is especially
with regard to communities living near Mine Kenny on the west and the east. The other one, sir, can the NLR please elaborate and indicate measures have been taken to ensure the establishment of the emergency control centers? I think the last one, sir, for now, it is with regard to the, it was noted that the NLR reported the pledge task has not achieved due to the resignation of the senior manager. Can we get a response with regard to that, the strategy, the resignation of the senior manager? In this regard, we want to the succession planning strategy that is going to ensure that the resignation of one person shall not render the program of the NCT to a halt. And the NR elaborate on that. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Premier. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. It is indeed concerning that your budget is being cut, particularly as government is busy announcing that they are embarking on a big new deal procurement process. I think that, I mean, even as your CEO, in fact, has said, is that actually what should be done is that the regulator should be out front. In fact, before we even embark on any kind of procurement process, what we should be doing is strengthening our regulatory capacity to be able to then deal with it, not the other way around, which is what it seems to be the case at the moment. Now, I think that as a committee, we would like to be able to help you. I think part of the problem, though, is that we are, in a sense, kind of flying blind at the moment, because we haven't been privy to the IAEA report, the State of Readiness report, which was done, I think it was last year that it was done. And we really need to get a copy of that report. And I have asked for that before, and parts of it have been kept away from us. It hasn't been made public. But I really think that the way that this needs to proceed is for us to get a copy of that report, for us to fully understand and for the public to fully understand what the kind of challenges we face if we're going to do a procurement of this size, and whether in fact we have the capacity, whether we have the infrastructure, and where the current gaps are. And then we can start to cost that, and we can start to say, well, these are the things we need to get in place before we even embark on such a procurement. So I would therefore like to ask, I don't know if you can give us a copy of it, or who would in fact give us a copy of that report, because I think that would really help us, and in a sense it would help us to be able to help you. But in the absence of such a report, what I would like to inquire is, I mean, I see the Treasury is cutting your budget as a regulatory authority, and I mean, that is very concerning. But what kind of a budget do you think that you would need to be able to put yourself in a situation where you could adequately prepare for this kind of procurement? What kind of budget are we looking at in terms of that? What kind of staffing arrangements are we looking at? If you could give us some sense of that so that we at least know what we're dealing with from that point of view. And then just on the issue of ownerless and derelict mines that was brought up by my colleague here, I just want to find out there, I have received reports, particularly of abandoned uranium mine, Palabora, where readings were taken back in 2000, which were about 3.56 civets, which I think it's civets, I think that's the right measure, which was particularly bad, but nothing has since been done, and apparently a lot of residents there are very concerned about the kind of radiation levels, and they did ask for NNR to come, and they had agreed that they never in fact came. I'm just wondering if you've got this on your kind of radar screen to go and do tests around that particular area to see that. Now, I know that what you said in the last slide is that a lot of these things tend to overlap with the Department of Mineral Resources as well. And clearly, I'm just wondering whether, in fact, we need to be looking at
legislative changes as well to clearly define your role in relation to the Department of Health and in relation to the Department of Mineral Resources. Is this required, and if so, is this something that we should be starting to work on? And, I mean, related to that as well, is also with this youth procurement, should we be looking at changing, you know, making certain legislative changes around that as well? I'm just interested in your opinions on that, whether those things need to be done.
I didn't hear which area we're referring to.
Palabora.
Narawlo.
Thank you very much, Jay, and yet again, humble apologies for being late. Mine, Chair, I just have two or three questions. Pardon. Pertaining to your challenges that you have raised, low staffing, and so forth. What are you going to do to sort that out, and when are you going to sort that out? Can you give us at least a time frame and so forth on their challenges? And also just to add to the cut of your budget, can you tell us as well, if your budget were to cut or have, what challenges can it pose on you as a regulator in doing your work within the industry? And then as well on the nuclear plant deal that the minister has signed, that the country is going to be building soon, do you think as a country we are ready for such a plant? Have you done in that regard investigations and so forth, that you think as a country, do you think, are we ready as a country? I don't know, am I repeating myself, but I'm very confused this morning. But do you think as a country, are we ready for such a venture? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable
Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me start by appreciating and congratulating you on your achieving a clean audit. I think it's exactly wrong with blowing your own trumpet, Doc. I think South Africans were so hard on ourselves, were so negative, we always highlight negative things. So it's good sometimes to note and highlight the good things that we're doing as entities and as also as a country. My question, I think we are noting the challenges, the lack of certainty on the side of government and the inadequate funding model. But I want you to elaborate what kind of funding model you would like to see. My second question is on the public information safety forums. How are they established and how are you managing them? The other question is the fruitless, or is it a fruitless expenditure? It's irregular expenditure of about 284,000 by an employee who didn't obtain the three conditions. It's not a minor thing. It's good that we have acquired clean audit, but we can't take it lightly, that because it can become a big thing. So we need to emphasize the internal control and lack of and not lack of encouraging your employees to stick to be compliant, to stick with the regulations and be compliant. So what have you done on that? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have a few questions which I'd like to direct to the team. The first one starting off with slide 15, where there was a mention of minor occurrences in relation to nuclear safety. Granted, it doesn't refer to it as a nuclear accident or nuclear incident, I'm grateful to hear, but we would possibly like more detail about what minor occurrences are, how many are there of them, what are the causes, what are the outcomes, obviously, Is there a trend? Are there more than there were last year? So it's probably something we should be reporting on, at least in some kind of line item, that we can have some sense of how successful we are at managing minor occurrences, as minor as they might be. I suppose when it comes to nuclear, and in terms of public safety, you know, mine is pretty big. I looked at your staff complement, and again, I'm hidden a lot of detail away. And compensation of employees has increased by 17%. Inclusive of living adjustment and an increase of staff complement. I'd be keen to understand how much of this cost is attributed to an increase in staff complement, how much of this is a result of increase in employee salaries, and if we had an understanding of what kinds of salary increases were awarded to the senior management levels lower down. I think that would be very useful, considering that this is probably your biggest single cost item. Probably a little more detail would be helpful. My third question is just around, and it might not be the question, might be, or the team from the National Regulator might not be able to answer, but I'm just interested to understand who keeps track of our enriched uranium stocks. There seems to be an understanding that our enriched uranium stocks are growing. For a country that doesn't have nuclear weapons of the sort, I'm keen to understand why the claim would be is getting bigger, and just to understand what does this process entail, why are we having more enriched nuclear stocks, and what are we planning to do with them, if anything, and surely it is my understanding that it should be getting smaller, not getting bigger, and perhaps the regulator can give us some insight on that. Thank you, Chair.
I don't want me to express my personal opinion on that one. Thanks, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the Honourable Members of the Committee for the questions. We will attempt to respond to the questions, and I will be yielding to some of my team members to augment. Let's start with the issue of the vacant position of the company secretary. I'm glad, Honourable McDowell, that this position has been good. There was a reorganization of the role. In fact, now it's no longer company secretary alone. We incorporated this responsibility within the strategy senior managers. The manager was responsible for strategies, now called manager strategy, governance, and organizational performance. So the role of the board secretary is integrated into the role. So, and it's fit. Question of staff, a very important question, especially in the light of the developments or impending developments in the nuclear sector. I'm afraid, Chairperson, that this has not happened yet, but it's going to happen by all means. We have a very small nuclear skills pool in the country, and just yesterday I was talking to the Audit and Risk Committee members, and I said to them, as we review our funding arrangements, we need to be very alert to the fact that we may have to review our salaries, because we have the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute coming on board. If you look at the skill set for that institute and that of National Nuclear Regulator, there's a lot of overlaps and similarities. And therefore, I would not be surprised to see most of my good guys crossing the fence if that institute makes it worthwhile for them. So we are definitely facing an imminent exodus or voting of staff unless we make it worthwhile for our staff members. The ongoing job evaluation process will also come up with recommendations on the just and proper salaries for our staff members. And we have also come up with some different kind of incentives to try and incentivize our staff in terms of good performance and long service and so on, to try and make it attractive, to try and make the National Nuclear Regulator an attractive employer of choice. So we are preparing ourselves for that voting, and we hope that we will be able to survive it unscathed, hopefully. The public safety information forum I will yield to Mr. Moonshine, to my extreme left, who is the member responsible for these activities, but he will come later. I will continue with others. on the issues of existing ownerless and legacy sites. This is always a question that pops out every time we're here, perhaps correctly so. The regulator has for the past many years grappled with this matter, and in my opinion, we have not addressed it adequately. At the beginning of this year, March, at the World Strategic Plan session, we identified this as one of the top 10 priorities of the organization, which the CEO and the executive management must develop a strategy for. Accordingly, we have developed a strategy which will deal with this particular legacy site. We receive from time to time concerns from the public, concerns from organized groups, so-called anti-nukes, civil society organizations, about this ownerless and legacy sites, tailing them, as you correctly pointed out. And we have resolved that we will present the strategy to deal with this to the board in January. Among other things that we are mulling is to even create a division within the NR that will specifically look at these things, because we believe that ownerless and legacy sites will be with us for the foreseeable future. And some of them have not been identified, and they will be identified as we go forward. So it is one of those things that will be with us for a long time, and we need to have proper planning for. And we are going to as soon as that is approved by the board, that strategy is approved by the board, we'll implement it and hopefully address this issue once for all. Measures taken to ensure establishment of emergency control centers. Indeed, the CFO has reported on one of our capital projects, which is a regulatory emergency response center. This is a center, a sophisticated center that will be based in Sinclair at our headquarters, but this will be have connections, satellite connections, to a number of points in the country. In other words, we'll have detection points in different areas closer to the facilities like Nexa. We'll have detection points in Brett, we'll have detection points in Marbing, we'll have detection points on the other side of Nexa towards Attractville and so on and so on. So these will be points that will be able to detect a plume. For example, if there is, there were to be a radioactive release at Nexa, this release will be based on the direction of the wind. This release will be detected by these points and be reported back to our emergency center in headquarters, and we will be able to issue instructions accordingly. If there needs to be an evacuation, for example, for the public, such information will be, such information will be made based on the detection that we get from this point. That project is very much underway. CSIR has been contracted for that to design the system for detection, and they have done their homework in terms of identifying all possible release routes for Nexa and Quebec, and therefore we are still in negotiations with different stakeholders. For example, City of Cape Town is one of those that have not given us a go-ahead to put our detection point. We're still negotiating with them on where we are placing, where we recommend to put this detection point, and also the police station at Brush, because CSIR has identified the police station at Brush to be one of the points where we'll put this detection point. But again, the police station has informed us that they have requested permission from the provincial commissioner to have this thing installed in their premises. So these are the only outstanding ones. Once these are cleared, we'll have it, the system will be deployed, and we'll have our emergency center up and running. Succession planning, in as far as the resignation of a senior manager is concerned, true. The senior manager resigned, as I mentioned, to senior manager corporate support services, and let's say that we have filled that position, and it was filled at the beginning of May. The previous senior manager resigned in November last year, so the position was not vacant for a long time, but at least about 6 months. And the honorable member will note that we are a very lean organization, and succession planning can become a challenge in that regard, especially for that position, because you have a situation where you have the senior manager at the top and no manager reporting to her. In fact, you have other HR practitioners and so on reporting to her. Now, there is a big generation gap in as far as the scope of operation is concerned, and therefore a succession planning for that particular position is not very easy to put in place. However, the junior people that reported to that senior manager were very well clued with the operations of the organization, to the extent that the new senior manager, after being on board, was properly briefed by the staff, though junior as they may be, but they were able to brief her to be able to get up to speed with the issues. So that is the situation with that. The issue of the email report from the IAA, unfortunately, that is not our area of responsibility. We have been assured, though, that the department said it will not release this report without a concomitant action plan to address the issues raised in this report. We think it is a sound decision because release it and then what? So release it and show the public that in as far as this is concerned, this is what we're planning to do or this is what we're doing. In as far as that one is concerned, this is what we're planning to do or this is what we're already doing. So we've been assured that it will be released, and I think it will be prudent for the department to release it, especially in as far as especially in the light of the new nuclear build that is being planned by the government. The budget for staff for the new build, very good question, and not easy to answer. It is a function of how many plants you want to build, first and foremost. I must say that currently the board approved additional 43 positions. Now, approval of positions is one thing, but funding of those positions is a completely different ballgame. And in this regard, we have to make do with some small change to slowly and in phases onboard some of these positions from the 43. To date, we are talking about close to 20 that we have managed to to onboard. We are hopeful of a positive outcome from the MTEF. Well, I should not even say hopeful, especially in the light of the new circular that we got from the National Treasury 2 days ago. But we were hopeful that the MTEF process will come with good news so that we can.
So you're still very shocked.
I'm still very shocked. I'm reeling from the shock. Yes. But we after onboarding the 43 staff members, I must emphasize again that the 43 was basically to boost current capacity and to prepare for the steam generator replacement project. Now, the plan though is that post the steam generator replacement project, we will then transfer the part of those staff members to the new build process. The board approved this on condition that we will use them for the new build also, and also with the proviso that we'll come back to the board and request additional approval for the new build as soon as it becomes clear. As far as the budget is concerned, that's what I'm saying. I cannot be in a position to put in dollars and pence at the moment because we don't know, for example, how many plants we will end up building. However, we need to put in context what would be necessary in terms of skills. First, we need to license the site. Now, we have more or less the core of the skills that we need for that particular role. But then come the issue of the design assessment, evaluating the design and giving a go-ahead on the design, whatever design it will be, if it's a Russian design or an American design or Korean design and so on. We will need a lot of skills in that area. We have procured the services of the technical support organization to assist us with the steam generator replacement process. This is nothing new. It's done by health regulators, because some of the skills, you need them once off. You cannot keep them in the house in perpetuity. that we need to have our own skills in the house for especially design evaluation and evaluation of the safety analysis report from the operator. In trying to achieve this, we mentioned during the budget speech of the minister that we are planning and establishing a center of excellence, a nuclear and radiation safety center of excellence, which will function hopefully as a pipeline of skills to the regulator. We are going to place it at the Northwest University in Potiphar and Mafeking, and it will be fully financed and serviced by the regulator. I don't know now in the light of the news we received, but it's our dream to create our own homegrown skills. And so we, with these two universities and with this university in the Northwest, we have discussed and agreed with collaboration with other overseas universities, the University of Michigan in the United States, Pennsylvania State University, and the Technical University of Helsinki in Finland, to collaborate with us in developing this center of excellence and helping us, for example, by sending emeritus professors to come and boost the skills. We are hoping to have research associates developed from this university, from this center of excellence. We are hoping to graduate master's and PhD students who, after graduation, will be ready to be absorbed into the regulator so that we have a sustainable pipeline of skills. We also hope that our operators will also have a role in this because they have an interest in making sure that the plants are run safely and of course, in making sure that they have a strong regulator. So, in sourcing out the funds for this, we will be looking at a number of revenue streams, government, first and foremost. We are also looking at talking to other government departments that may have interest in this, for example, Department of Science and Technology, through the Center of South African Research Chair Initiative. We've spoken to the Director General and of Science and Technology, and they have received their idea with great enthusiasm. So we hope that this will address the issue of skills going forward in the new build. Owner-less and derelict mines for Palabroa, I must say that this is coming to my attention for the first time, and so I don't have a lot of detail around this, save to say that we have a strategy to deal with these derelict mines. And one of the tasks in that strategy is to identify, because it's going to take a lot of effort to identify all these sites. Some of them are unknown and are yet to be discovered. Some of them are already squatted and people have already residing on these. It's going to be a very, very, very difficult process, which we hope will need the cooperation of both government departments and municipalities, because some of these areas, all of these areas are residing in municipal land, and we need to have a working relationship with municipalities to make sure that the Department of Human Settlements will also have to be drawn into the picture, because they may have to relocate some of the people and place them somewhere else in a safer area. So this is going to be a big project, and we think it will sort out the issue once and for all. And legislative changes for the role of the NNR and that of the DOH. Yes, we have started that process. In the light of our discussions with the Department of Health, we have already effected proposals in our draft amendment, amended NNR Act, to include category 3 and 4 radioactive sources. It's there in the draft legislation, which we already forwarded to the department. We are hoping that at some point it will make its way to your honorable source. Tracking strategies, what are you doing, and budget? What are you doing with this staffing strategies? Honorable Low, this is the issue that I've already highlighted. We are trying, with the little funds that we have, to onboard, phase in the onboarding of this new staff that we are trying to get. But again, that phasing in will be very much dependent on the decisions that were taken by the National Treasury as to whether they will be sustained or perhaps they will be changed of mind. We are still hoping, though, that we will have discussions with the Department, the National Treasury, Department of Energy and National Treasury, and see if we can be able to come to a common understanding. Because as far as we are concerned, apparently these cuts were effected because they identified reserves in our corpus. Now, these reserves were erroneously identified as reserves because these are ring-fenced amounts for capital projects. And so we cannot spend a budget for capital projects overnight. It has to follow the project schedule. And so the interactions between us and Treasury never took place to ascertain whether these funds are indeed excess funds or these funds are committed. And so the cut was based on very wrong assumptions, and we think we need to have a dialogue with the National Treasury to revisit this decision. Budget cuts, what will the effects be? Indeed, if that decision stays, I'm afraid then we need to change the tone when we talk about the nuclear new build, because it's not going to happen from our side, from the regulatory side. Because if we do not have that capacity, then there will be no licensing. And we can't have a situation where there's no licensing process for the nuclear power plant. So that's the issue of budget cuts has to be looked at very, very critically, because it hinges on the go or no-go for nuclear power, for the nuclear energy problem. Readiness for nuclear build as a country? I can only answer for the regulator, not the country. The Department of Energy will answer for the country. The regulator has undertaken a self-assessment process to look not only into issues of capacity, but to look into readiness as far as regulations are concerned. We, in this regard, worked with the International Atomic Energy Agency, and we identified a number of gaps in our regulatory framework. I'm very glad to see that those gaps have been addressed. We have been rolling out developing regulations that have already progressed to the level of the minister. They will make their way to yourselves again and hopefully be promulgated as soon as possible. So we think we are 90 to 95% ready in as far as our regulatory infrastructure is concerned, by means of regulations in particular. Starting, yes, we conducted, again, through this self-assessment process. We had discussions with the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission to get some advice on just getting the feeling of how much people would need for a particular, let's say, 1,000 megawatts nuclear power plant. And based on those studies that they have done, we were able also to produce to have a very good idea of how many people will need per plant. And this largely also informed our resource plan that the board has approved. So we have a good idea of how many people will need, what kind of skills will need, and how much we will have to defer to a technical support organization in the form of a contractor or consultant, if you will. So we have those and I don't have the exact situation here, but we've done that exercise and we know how much we need to be 100% ready in as far as human resources are concerned. Funding model, what kind of a model do we think would be best? Very good question. We went out on an international benchmark exercise to look at different countries on how they fund their regulatory bodies. Now, there are different approaches. Take the United States. The United States will, Congress will pass a budget for the NRC. And that budget, the NRC will go and collect, so the budget will take care of all the needs of the regulator, regardless of what they do out there, regardless of how much they collect. And at the end, these authorization fees that they collect will be then sent back to the treasury. In other words, you are given your allocated budget according to your needs and aspirations, and you are held accountable to that budget, so it is 100% allocation. And then you collect authorization fees, license fees from the operators, it's not yours, you repatriate it back to the national treasury. That is unlawful. In other words, government funds everything. The Russians are doing the same thing. They are 100%, excuse me, the United States is 90%, 90-10, so 90% from government and 10 from licensees, which is very minimal. The Russians is 100%. The states issue all the budget that will be all-encompassing, and then whatever they collect, not even conducted by the regulators, conducted by the state, from the operator, goes back to the national reserve. The regulator is not involved in the process. Now, we have proposed that given our tough economic situation in this country, the government must give us leeway to charge authorization fees from the regulators, from the operators, a large part of it. And I think we proposed 80-20, right? We said we take 50% of our fees from the operators and 20% from government. However, we experience problems also in that regard, because when we say we want to collect so much from the operators, National Treasury comes in and says, no, that is too much. You cannot increase the authorization fees with that amount. They regulate with how much we increase the authorization fees. Now, given the current scenario, it gives us no room to maneuver, because if they say they cut the budget, and for reasons that they advance, we are not opposed to that. But we are saying, then give us permission to augment the cuts from the authorization fees. But that would mean something like 15 to 20% increase in the authorization fees. And that, again, is a no-go for traders. Traders would say you have to do it based on inflation, which is not the case. So we are sitting with a kind of a problem. Minor occurrences, what are they and what are the details? Perhaps we need to first explain what minor occurrences are. Minor occurrences would be some violations in the operation of a facility or safety culture or behavior that is seen to be not compliant with the expectations of the regulator, but that do not violate the license conditions of the particular authorization holder. I do not have the details of what the occurrences are, but safe to say that they are of no safety significance, but indeed they have to be reported. It's required that they are reported. And what do? We always issue directives to demand corrective action, to demand that we be shown a plan that says this is how we're going to correct this kind of misdemeanor or non-compliance. So that is what we do. Compensation of employees. The CFO will talk to this on what constituted what portion constituted the increase for staff and what constituted adjustment, cost living adjustment. But I just need to say that the executive, I think the emphasis was on the executive. The executive did not get the increases. We got, I think, 6.5 CPI increase, so it's not, it didn't come to my salary, thank God. Cheerful.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I'll just add a bit on the issue of funding model. What the CEO was talking about 80-20 is that it's what the government contributes to us right now before they implement the current cutback. We need certainty on that. Now, the challenge with the current model is that as they have done, if you look at the proportion, it's 80-20, but right now they're cutting. So all of a sudden, you need to cope with 90-10. So what we were proposing was around about 68 and 32. 32 for government and 58 for industry. Now, this figure of 68-32 is found from the trends in terms of what the NNR does on behalf of government, in terms of their participation with the IEA codes, in terms of the bilateral agreements, in terms of the assistance of the department as they need those technical expertise in any other decision making that they might be wanting to do. So we have made an assessment and determined the trend of how much does it cost the NNR to assist government. And that is where the 32% threshold comes from, where we are saying that the industry can absorb the 68, and then government then certainly absorb what the organization does to assist it for. There is an issue around the irregular expenditure raised by the Honorable Masal. The issue is the issue there is that this is the last year in regular expenditure. This current financial year and review, we have not incurred any. But just to give context to that, it was a need of training, mainly in industry-related courses, wherein you find that we are getting a course maybe from US, or we're getting a course from Russia or wherever the course might be. Now, these are industry-related courses which are offered by particular bodies. You cannot then go out and get a competitive bidding process because there is relatively no one else offering it elsewhere at the time with the same scope. So we did, we have amended our policies and procedures to cater for that particular for such instances. The issue of salaries in terms of how much we increased our cost of living and how much was allocated to the growth of staff, of the 17%, say, in the previous financial year, the NNR increased the salaries 8% across board, but it has a three-year term kind of a system, wherein in 3 years, first year, you go across the board, the next year is a threshold, and the third year is a threshold, and on the fourth year, then you do a across the board while assessing how you then go forward. So in the current financial year, the senior management, our senior staff, they got CPI on the dot. And the second tier to the middle level, they got CPI plus 0.5%. And the lowest level staff got CPI plus 1%. Now, when you look at that, you see that then the actual growth in terms of the capacity was around about 10%. Now, that's what we've been targeting for the previous financial year, talking about the resource plan that we have done and approved by the board that we face in as and when, depending on how much we have. So for the previous financial year, we increased about 10%, and we have planned a growth of 10% in the current financial year as well, as far as the actual capacity is concerned and not the salary increases. Okay, I think I'm fairly done with what was raised. Through you, the last issue that was raised was about public sector information forum, which I think the CEO had requested my colleague to assist with. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. The points relating to the public safety information fund that were raised was on the establishment of the fund, how is it established, and how is it maintained and operated. I'm going to briefly talk to those two sections. The NNR Act requires media installation license holders in South Africa to hold a public safety information fund. It is a compulsory requirement, basically as a mechanism for the installation holder to share information with the public. And that information specifically deals with information relating to emergency planning and other issues on nuclear safety. So it's an important link from the operator to the public. Now, in our area of regulation, KUBAC holds a forum for the Cape Town area. NEXTRA holds a forum for the Karandava site and the Falpus waste poultry. So we are three active forums. The installation license holders, NEXTRA and ESCOM, are required to advertise and invite members to the forum every quarter. So what they would do is that every 2 weeks before the forum, they would publish a notice in the local municipality, inviting members, announcing, we're having the meeting, these are the agenda points, you're welcome to attend. So it's a public process. At the forum, the actual maintenance and operation of the forum, the NNR Board of Directors, as per the regulation 968, passed in September 2012, is required to, via a public process, to appoint chairpersons and deputy chairpersons to manage the forum on behalf of the license holder. So you're going to ESCOM provide the infrastructure in terms of the venue, the secretariat, but the chairs and deputy chairs are nominated from the public. So that is an important instrument to create non-biasness. So basically what the chairs do, they facilitate topics, they source topics from the public, topics of interest, and they request it from the holder, Eskom and Nexon, to respond to the public on those issues. At the forum, Eskom and Nexon invite the local municipality in Cape Town, it's the City of Cape Town Disaster Management Traffic Department, and other role players that will be involved in an emergency, should it happen. So it is an important mechanism. I hope I've shared enough information, but I'm prepared to take any follow-up questions to that. But I just want to add, one of the activities emanating from the forum is regulate the emergency exercise which we have. We are hosting it this week, 21, 22, and 23. The emergency exercise actually takes place on the 22nd. Now, at this forum, issues of emergency planning, preparedness and response are a primary topic. Now, the regulator on the 22nd of October, that is next week, Wednesday, will test the Cobalt Integrated Nuclear Emergency Plan and also the various role players involved in that. Thank you, Chair.
Please don't be long.
My comments are very brief.
You're really enjoying yourselves now.
We're on a roll, Chair.
We're very much of the same.
No, I'll be very brief. Our CEO referred to skill sets, and I just wanted to preempt a question which could be along the lines of, well, you're regulating Coburg, why can't you just simply swap resources from Coburg to a new build? Well, apart from that being not a very sensible thing to do in terms of reducing numbers, the fact is that during the construction of new plants, you need totally different skills. You need inspectors who understand manufacturing processes, non-destructive testing techniques. It's a whole new ball game. And over the years, basically, we've lost those skills, Coburg having progressed into the operational mode. And that brings me to my second comment. Patently, there's always a lot of interest around events or occurrences from operating plants. Operating plants will always give rise to these sorts of occurrences. And I'd just like to give your committee the assurance that this is one of the reasons we have a permanent site presence. We have inspectors at Coburg who are ready and available to do root cause analysis, if necessary, of each and every occurrence. So these are logged and graded, and we take all of these very seriously. It is a fact that accidents normally have precursors, and if one is vigilant enough, it's possible to use that as a good indicator. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CEO. Last word, quickly.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to highlight to what Mr. Mashami has said, that the Public Safety Information Forum has been noted as a convention. South Africa is a signatory to a convention on nuclear safety. And we have annual reviews of this convention. And this past March, we had the review meeting in Vienna, where the country reports on its on progress regarding the upholding of convention on nuclear safety. And we reported about our Public Safety Information Forum, and I'm very glad to inform this committee that this was actually loaded as best practice by the international community, to the extent that some of the countries began to ask a lot of questions from us because they would love to have this kind of a setup because they think it is a very, very big good measure of transparency in the operation of nuclear power plants and in the carrying out of the oversight role by the regulator. Chairperson, would like to thank you very much for the opportunity and wish you and your committee well in the next year. 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, we stand for a break now. Sir, how many minutes? 10. 10 minutes. I know the program says we have follow-up questions. We have run out of time. That's the problem, Honorable Law.
I just want to remind you that I've implored you to think, given where we stand, not just about the location of Parliament, but the location of some of the strategic installations in the country. You must think about that. Honorable Freyler, you heard what are the possible implications of a budget cut for NMR. So it may be good to support the budget cut because it achieves the objective for other means. Okay, can we break it for 10 minutes and come back? And then I will excuse. Thank you very much.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
We need all the information on whatever's decided to review before we can issue a license. And however long that will take is another issue. But the point is that that's got to be done. See, Treasury's saying one thing, President's saying another. So we've more or less decided to estimate this because
I told them yesterday, as soon as the fiscal fires,
the thing that's going to be pointed at us, why are you delaying things? Hard money.
And then we're like, well,
we're going to have to stop. That's right.
And difficult years.
I mean, it was bad enough getting started in Cuba. That's where I came back in 1974. I'm not from here originally. A lot of guys came from England because the nuclear industry there wasn't doing much at the time, so they were able to recruit quite a lot of people. But that avenue is closed now. But they're not taking people in from overseas because of the new arrangements in the country. We might have to check out, that might have to be reviewed. You can just take on consultants, I suppose, but even that isn't always easy. But nonetheless, what I'm really saying is that it was easier then. And to recruit in a period of uncertainty before end contract space makes it doubly difficult. Engineers want to get on with the job, and geniuses want to get their hands dirty. Licensing is one of the less glamorous areas of engineering because we're not building anything. Our final product is a piece of paper. In fact, licensing is a very interesting career, but it's very difficult to get this over at interview, say, to a prospective candidate who is an engineer or a scientist, you know. They want to get their hands dirty. And as soon as, let's say, a vendor gets an order, they'll be looking to start. So they just up the salaries and they just pinch. It's rotting beef to pay Paul all the time.
Very difficult.
This is just what it was like in Cuba, but it's going to be 10 times worse.
No, because the next day you're old.
Much bigger bill. I mean, this is what we wanted at the time of Cuba, a convoy of plants. Because you need to set up in the country a certain level of infrastructure to supervise nuclear energy, and we did set it up, but at what cost? It was only servicing two units.
Now you're still over.
Now we've got this. Yeah, well, look, a lot of it is there. A lot of it is there, but a lot of it has been lost. As I just said, we need to set up a whole new inspection machine to go to Russia or China or wherever. And that's going to be very difficult. We're going to be dealing with specifications and codes and practice that we're not familiar with. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be very interesting for engineers and scientists. Whether I want the job or not, I don't know. So, yeah, it is an interesting time. And it's a very ambitious project. And where the money's going to come from, the money was to come from overseas, thankfully.
Yeah.
I think this is the idea that we have an owner-operator who's foreign. And that's another problem. We've got to issue a license to an owner-operator. The Act says no person shall operate, blah, 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 without a license. No person, a juristic person. That's always been assumed because the Act was written for ESCOM. It's essentially recognizing that ESCOM would be the owner-operator, like Cooper. ESCOM's not the owner-operator. We've got another problem. And now we've got to liaise with him and get information from him. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, yeah. No, I told the previous minister, I came to see us some months ago, that for God's sake, in the contracts, make sure there's adequate provision for, the licensee to get them from the contractor all the information that we want. Because we don't deal directly with the constructor. We deal directly with our licensee. The licensee stroke operator. So he has got to get information in turn. And in fact, he's got to replicate our organisation within his organisation. Because he's got to present his safety case to us. The burden's on him. The burden's not on us. The burden's on him to prove safety to us. And we check, basically, his safety case. But so that safety case can be put together, he's got all that information from his contractor. And if the contractor and the licensee are one and the same thing, like, I don't know, if it was done with Russia, for example, whether Rosatom would be the owner operator and contractor, all they want, how would that work? So all these things, we haven't even talked about. Well, we've talked amongst ourselves, but to the powers that be, we haven't talked about. So it's going to be
big holes.
Yeah. Look, it can all be passed. It can all be passed over satisfactorily. But we've got to talk to people. And Zoom is saying one thing. Australia is saying no. That's the bird he's got to be put right. Yeah. We're done. It's neck and neck. So you can see what they have to say. I think that they've become the spokesman for the DOE, I think.
Yeah.
I was reading the newspapers and next to them said so and so about the nuclear new build. The DOE have given up. Anyway,
it's been nice to
see you. See you around now, guys.
All the best for the,
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Go on.
Bye.
Thank you. That's up there.
Thank you.
Jump in if you can.